This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, it's a good Sunday morning.
You know, this is my favorite time of the year because, like, on Friday you can play golf and then on Sunday you can ski. we somehow go from, mid-70s to the 40s, overnight. There's something nice about that you don't have to wait a long time to go from one sport to another sport. And today we have a very interesting guest, speaking of sports. Clint Cordial is joining us, who's a Missoula-reared chiropractor who has just retired from spending 10 years on the pro tennis circuit with arguably the best American tennis player of that last 10-year period, John Isner.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure he has great stories about traveling the ATP tour with John Isner and being around the likes of Serena Williams and other great tennis players and their entourages. And it's interesting to find out about his life and what's he doing now in Missoula, Montana.
How amazing is it that Missoula never stops delivering, never ceases to amaze me in terms of the people that are hiding out in the hills here.
Right.
And people that do really extraordinary things.
Well, they come here and they go away because they grew up in a small town in some cases.
Right.
And come back when they have a chance, or they wander here like you and I. I came here and bought a house and I thought it would be a vacation home, and now I've lived here for 25 years. And I never, as a kid growing up, if somebody said you're going to live in Montana for 25 years, I'd have said you're crazy. I'm a city guy. I've always lived in cities. But there's just something special about this place. And a lot of people we know have either stumbled here or have come back here, and they're better for it than the path they were following.
You and I did the exact opposite.
Right.
We came here with a lot of experience and a lot of ideas.
Right.
And we've been able to share that with other people.
Well, part of it has to do also with the way communications and the way business has been structured. Nobody cares anymore where you live.
Yeah, that's true.
And particularly after COVID. I mean, clients that I have, my consulting, no one ever says where you are. Where
right.
are you?
Right. They don't care.
They don't care anymore. As long as you can do the work. As long as you can produce product that they're interested in, doesn't matter where you live. And why not live here instead of some inner city, traveling 45 minutes each way to work every day?
So we have a world-class athletic trainer, sports trainer coming in
yes.
to be on the show today.
Yeah, and he's back in Missoula, and we're glad to have him back.
And comes from a long line of folks that brothers, sisters,
father
that treats athletes.
Yes, so it'll be a fun conversation today.
I'm looking forward to it. When we come back, our guest, Dr. Clint Cordial, back after this. Arnie Sherman, we are back with our guest, Dr. Clint Cordial.
Clint, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So you're a lifetime Montanan. What drove you to become a chiropractor? What was the pathway you took?
Yeah, I think I took a unique journey getting here. My dad's a physical therapist. He's been a physical therapist for as long as I remember, and he's still practicing right now. So growing up in that kind of model was always something really, really cool. And the way he's ran his business has, been very open, kind of unique. I think when we think of medical type professions, we think of kind of sanitation and that sort of thing. And his office has always been very mom and pop shop.
Where's his office?
So we're located off of Spruce and May. So,
here in town.
Yeah, here in town, right across the street from Miracle Ear and kind of St. Pat's in that area.
Oh, sure.
A red brick building on the corner
there. And how long has your dad been practicing here?
I'd say 30 plus years, maybe 40, like 35 years.
Did he go to the university for PT?
He went to the University of Montana for PT. He did undergrad at Stanford.
Wow.
Played football there.
Wow.
Jim Plunkett was quarterback there. He was a quarterback.
Wait, what?
But He's got a crazy story in himself, but he was grew up here in Montana. He was a sports legend, so to speak, in the high school era, and then went to college. And then
is he originally from Montana?
He was born in California, and then he kind of popped around from different places in Montana. Yeah, so he was here in Sentinel or went to Sentinel for a period of time, went to Helena for a period of time, and then went on to a junior college and then found himself at Stanford.
And then you were raised here, right?
I was raised here, yeah. I went to Sentinel and all these grade schools here, you know, Cold Springs when we had it there and middle
Arnie,
school.
Arnie, Dr. Cordial finds himself in the midst of these high school kids now because he works with a lot of them. Is that correct? Like you and your dad do, right?
Yeah, I'll work with anybody. For me, for the past 10 years, I've traveled with pro sports and primarily pro tennis. So I've been with the best of the best, our best American tennis player in the world for the past 10 years.
Who's that?
His name's John Isner.
Okay, and,
you know, he got to a career high, number 8 in the world. And he just capped off the world record for the most aces of anybody.
How did you get involved in tennis and working with pro tennis players?
Yeah, so I got into chiropractic school, you know, and was doing that. And then I have a big family, and we're all kind of in this field. I got a sister.
How many are you?
There's 5 including me, so I got 4 brother. I have 3 brothers and a sister. And 2 of my brothers, well, one brother is a physical therapist, another is a chiropractor, does what I do, and my sister is a massage therapist. Huh. So my older brother, Rory, he was in PT school ahead of me, got in to a training facility, used to be called Athletes Performance. Mm-hmm. It was based down in Scottsdale, Arizona. Right. And Mark Verstegen kind of took him under his wing, and that's who he really wound up, you know, learn from and stuff. So
who's Mark Verstegen?
Mark Verstegen's like a world renowned, you know, kind of strength coach specialist.
Right. And he's created down there in Scottsdale.
Now branded his name as Exos. So they go into different companies and they kind of revamp you with nutrition and you know, fitness and lifestyle changes. Great company. And so Rory was down there doing some internship, and you're around athletes. So athletes go there to train for the combine in football, or in their off seasons, it's a high level area to train and kind of, you know, further yourself into the next year
for
your sport. So being around there, being amongst some athletes and stuff, he met a tennis guy, or a tennis guy reached out. And then when Rory got done with school, that connection, you know, happened. And so Rory got onto the ATP tour working with the pro tennis player. Rory was working a few years, and then I was about to get out and was like, hey, you know, maybe, you know, he was friends with John, the guy I work with, and James Blake, really good friends and stuff. And so it was like, James, you know, Blake, hey, might as well, you know, try my brother out, see if you guys like each other and whatever. So we did a tournament in Indian Wells. It's a big tournament.
In Palm Desert.
Beautiful tournament.
Oh, amazing,
you
tournament.
Know, one of the best.
Supposedly,
you
know, some people say it's the prettiest setting for tennis.
It's arguably the best tournament on tour. Even the Grand Slams. I mean Grand Slams are great, but this tournament it's incredible. We kind of started our first tournament there, and John finaled it both on singles and doubles. So he had, you know, a career high, you know, performance then, and then we went on to another tournament and then another, and we kind of created our partnership like that.
So for our listeners, John Isner is 6'10". He's an extraordinarily unusual tennis player. Most of them are much more compact than that. And he arguably had during his tenure, I think he's 37 now, during his tenure on the pro circuit, he arguably has the fastest or best serve of anyone. Set the record for number of aces, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's an anomaly for the sport, like you said. And, yeah, being 6'10", you better have a missile, right? Because you're probably not running like a deer out there.
No, right. But the thing that I'm interested in is, does a 6'10 tennis player have different medical, you know, needs? When his muscles go out, when his bone structure is frazzled, when he's run the courts for 3-4 hours – is his problems different than a 5'11 or a 6-foot tennis player?
Yeah, no. And so that's very interesting, right? Like, everybody thinks that way.
Right.
But if you start looking at it, and basketball is a good
area of
sport, right? You start looking at those individuals and where they break down. So where they break down might be very similar, right? The hips, back, the knees, you know, a lot of things like that. But everybody's going to be different and unique, and it's all in their movements, right? So you might have weak glutes or weak adductors, and maybe your knees cave in, and maybe your knees are going to be really a big issue, you know, or maybe you're strong there and maybe you're weak somewhere else. So your body's going to compensate somewhere else. And that energy leak is going to create, let's say, the deterioration of the joint and, you know, cause you the pain and the problems there. So you might, everybody, what I'm trying to say is you're going to have specific injuries or areas that you're going to target.
Right.
For each person, not necessarily different body sizes. Sure, there's going to be correlations, but
everybody's physiology is different.
It right. is different. Yeah.
And in your case, given your breadth of training, not only being a chiropractic physician, but also being a physical therapist, I would assume your relationship to John was more than just, you know, helping him with aches and pains, but you were there to try to give him training advice. So he could minimize that effect on him.
Yeah, so I provided a lot, and I do provide a lot.
Right.
So I provide, you know, obviously the basic chiropractic, which we think, hey, just the adjustment, you know, and my scope of practice is so much bigger and so much more inclusive. So I blend, yes, that idea of the adjustment, which is super powerful, and into, all right, now how do we get the orthokinematics? How does like a joint move? How does the body kind of, you know, circulate and move, and it should fluidly glide and all that. That has to be correct. And then from there, we have to have the muscles working correctly, firing correctly, you know. And so that's kind of more like rehab physical therapy kind of look at. Right. A lot of exercises, a lot of different, you know, ways of teaching people how to, you know, correct ergonomics or correct posture type things. And then the nutrition is a whole nother thing. And then from that, all right, now the fitness. So now you're healthy and you're well. How do you challenge someone? You know, what are you doing? How are you pushing them, you know, to get and stay up at that level?
I would assume that you believe that your approach, this more holistic approach with diet and exercise and training and adjustments, is a better way and would minimize the number of hip and joint related surgeries that take place. Every time somebody gets hurt, they need to get surgery.
Right.
You know,
yes, I 100%, I think, you know, and I think it's good just to have a couple of different opinions, you know, when you do have those aches and pains, you know, to search out as many people as you can. The more people you talk to and the more information you can take in, the better kind of, endpoint you can kind of find yourself. So for me, yeah, with any injury, second guess that if it's surgery, you know, is the first thing on the box. Like, you know, I personally think our bodies are made to adapt, and we can model and we're quite remarkable in that.
So an athlete puts their body under incredible stress, and there's a lot of traumas that can hit a body doing a professional sport. What would you say is a good preventative kind of therapy/practice so that when they're not playing, but when they get to the court or to the field of play, they're in good condition, right? So
don't do that sport.
Is it weight training? Is it diet? It's obviously it's a lot of things, right?
Yeah, it's
but what would you say is like kind of the core foundation?
So pro athlete or just anybody in general? Anybody in general. I mean, look, like if you can look at the body and look at like circular, like there's so many pieces to the pie, right? Like
sure.
that go into like your overall health. So I think laughter, I think community, having good people around you is a massive thing that we don't even think about, right? Just the people you surround yourself with. I think nutrition is one of the biggest, you know, I mean, just having that systemic inflammation from putting bad stuff in your body creates these feelings or aches and pains that we just don't really kind of put a finger on because we don't get it. It takes about 21 days to really clean your body out. Right. And then when you add something in, that's messing me up.
Holy stuff, right.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, so the nutrition thing, I think we don't even really know how powerful that is.
Right.
Some people don't.
Staring at us when he's,
no, I'm not.
When he's talking about this.
We're in an empty white room. I'm looking at eyeballs. I'm just trying.
But Clint, I will say this. Inflammation is the greatest enemy to progress and to feeling good, is foods or things that cause inflammation.
Yeah.
And I only learned that as I got older when I realized, like, I had gout. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I never really had any arthritic condition. And I realized that, geez, this is just something I never anticipated. I always felt very flexible and free. So
exactly. And especially like with something like what you've experienced, like, you know, it like firsthand big time.
Oh, it's awful.
Know? And the other thing is our body, we do age, right? And our cells age. And so, you know, if you look at like babies or younger kids, they're so resilient and they respond, you know, so fast with different things. And they're able to take in, you know, Cheetos or stuff like that, sure, and bounce back. And crappy as we foods. Get older, we can't. So,
right,
you know, it comes with wisdom. You come with, oh, wow, now I can kind of feel this difference. But
well, it's for sure. If you've been staying away, for example, from sweets,
yeah,
you know, for months, and then you go to somebody's birthday party or whatever, and all of a sudden you're eating a bunch of sugar, you immediately feel that
you
in your body.
Feel good, yeah.
You don't feel good.
You don't feel good.
I mean, you certainly can.
Yeah.
I want to get back to the sports issue because it's a hot topic of conversation, right? The Miami quarterback goes out 2 weeks in a row and concussions. People are saying he should retire at 24. They gave him the go ahead to play. I remember Scott remembers the best running back the New York Giants ever had before Saquon Barkley was Tiki Barber. He rushed one season for over 1,600 yards and he retired at 31. And I remember reading an article, I'll never forget this article, it was in the New Yorker magazine, with a lengthy article about him and his career and why did he go out when he was 31. And he said in the article that every time he had been tackled in his 9-year career in the NFL, it felt like he was falling off backwards off a ladder.
Yeah. That's
how does the body, how do these guys take it? How do we allow that to continue to happen? Padding and helmets can't be the only way to, to protect.
Yeah. And I don't think we are. I think it's going to be a very simple answer. And if you want to hear the truth, I don't think you can, because everybody's getting stronger, bigger, and faster. Bigger,
right,
faster,
right,
stronger.
Right, right.
You know, so it's not going the opposite way. And pads, you know, and like you hear some of these other quarterbacks and other, you know, pro players talk about it. And they're like, well, we can't just keep adding different rules. Like, it's going to change the game, you know.
Well, it does. I mean, so
it does.
30
totally.
Penalties a game.
But I think the issue is, you know, especially from the sports medicine background, that guy should have never been on the field, right? After that first game, Bills or whatever.
Tua?
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't even.
And so that's where we got to protect these guys. If they're going to go out there and sign their name and say, hey, all right, you know, and they know, I mean, everybody knows playing football. Hey, I can get banged up. It's dangerous.
Right.
But you got to also be able to say, hey, I need to be protected a bit, you know, and I think, I don't know the answer, you know.
Well, you're absolutely right. They're getting bigger, faster and stronger. A friend of mine was a highly touted high school quarterback, went to college, played at a top school, and as a sophomore got into a game and was blindsided by Lawrence Taylor. Wow. He never played another snap again in his life.
Yeah.
Hey, you know? And one of many, thankfully.
Yeah. There are a lot of, but there are now people that are bigger and stronger and in some cases meaner. I mean, if you get hit by, any of these, Aaron Donald.
Or a cis trunk.
Right. I mean, the other thing that you can see now that we're, you know, you can see the history, you see some of these players who are now 50 and they look 70.
Yeah.
You know, they're disabled.
Look, and like, I played high school football, right? And I loved it. And I definitely sustained a few concussions in that time. And I feel like I have some of the symptomatology a little bit. You know, I get irritated a little bit easier, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's correlation or if it's my kids or what, but I think it is. I think it's I know my speech can go off a little bit. I think I don't enunciate my words maybe the best. And I've noticed this, you know.
That's interesting.
Right, like when I was studying grad school and kind of studying stuff and taking a look at like, oh crap, what have I put my body through? You know?
Right.
And, you know, there's other ways, you know, now there's certain things you can do to kind of challenge your brain and, you know, try to help,
well, some
you
people,
know,
don't you remember
do different things to
right
better to, yourself
to, you know, therapy. But, yeah. But don't you remember they were trying to correlate OJ's, his
right.
violence.
Yes. Who was right.
To traumatic brain injury. And, because he suffered a number of concussions and probably over the years, and probably they didn't even know. They just sent him back in, right? And there's a whole bunch of stories like that.
Well, you're exposed to an environment where you would, because of the money involved.
I think that movie, Friday Night Lights, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it exposes it really pretty, or it's just, hey, let's. my bonus, my bonus if I get in, and you know,
flip it over to mixed martial arts and boxing. Yeah. You got people kicking you in the head.
In the head.
Right.
Let's do a quick ID. Our guest is Dr. Clint Cordial. He is a doctor here in Missoula working with the body mechanics. He is by trade a chiropractor, but also has a very deep practice in nutrition, strengthening coach,
physical therapy.
So this is a fascinating conversation.
Well, because it covers lots of different areas, but I think the proof is in the pudding when you see athletes from the contact sports 20 years later. Watch Mike Tyson now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he never spoke very clearly to begin with, but now it's like mumbles. You're going to see the movie Creed 3 is coming out again, and that's going to be a resurgence in interest in boxing and the mixed martial arts. Most of those folks, you watch some of the hockey players?
Right.
I mean, I was watching the Ranger game the other day, and Mark Messier, he doesn't look anything like what he looked like 10, 12 years ago.
He's a little leaner, though,
he's
right?
He's leaner, but I'm saying...
He's actually taking care of himself.
Yeah, he's one that has some of the others haven't as much.
When I used to work for the New York Rangers, and we used to have old-timers day, and when players...
When Jump Wars League came out.
But you know who was the one who was really... It was some of these old defenders. When they came back, the guys in the 60s and 70s, they did not look good. And it was their face. It was their head.
What?
It wasn't their because remember there's low trauma to their legs when they're skating. So it wasn't as big an issue. It was everything above the net, above the waist.
Right. Andy Bathgate. Do you remember him?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys.
We had an Andy Bathgate day at the Rangers.
And Crosby is the one that sticks out in my mind.
Oh yeah.
That injury. I mean, he took a year off, 2 years or something like that.
Thank God for that, Sydney.
Yeah. I mean, it. Those are tough sports, and it's hard. And it's also, there's a lot of competition and issue related to high school and collegiate sports.
Well, tell us, first of all, talk to us about, I don't want to get off the tennis so quickly. What was it like being on tour, by the way?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was.
Tell us what does incredible mean?
I think anytime, my story is so unique because I got to do it with a couple of my brothers, too. So we were all traveling, you know, first started with these, you know, top American pro tennis players.
And they're treated pretty goodly on the tour.
Traveling the world, you know. And
the world, right?
Yeah. Literally the world. So we're going to, like, Australia, you know, for the beginning part of the year for the Australian Open.
Did you do Roland Garros in Paris?
We did Roland Garros. We did Wimbledon. We did U.S. Open, you know. So we're spending months in Europe together, you know. And
why months? What was the – so how did that work?
That's how the schedule's set up. So,
no, sure, but why were you there for a long period of time? I know, like, the tournament's like 2 weeks.
So, Roland Garros is 2 weeks, but before that, there's several tournaments in Europe.
I see.
So
it's like the PGA that goes on every weekend.
Everything leads up.
Yeah. And so, it's kind of like a snake, you know, as far as the schedule. It goes over to, like, Europe, and then it'll come back over here, and then it goes to Australia. And Wimbledon, you know, comes in. We're just there for a bit, and then – you end the year typically over in Asia, but since COVID, you know, they've shut that down a little bit. But and then you have another little series in Europe there.
And then in New York during the Open, the U.S. Open.
Yeah. And that's the summer. The summer swings always here in the U.S., right? Yeah. So there's different tournaments kind of in the different states. And then obviously the big one is Grand Slam in New York.
Right.
And that's kind of how tennis is. It's built on the four Grand Slams. So Australia, we leave, you know, typically right after Christmas. And you're over in Australia for a few different tournaments, you know, leading up.
Right.
So you just stay there. You don't keep coming back and forth. You stay there.
And then you come back here, you play a few tournaments here in the U.S., and then you head over to Europe.
Right.
And in Europe, you have Madrid, Rome, maybe a smaller tournament leading into, like, the French.
And are you interacting with your principal, your every day? I mean, are you doing stuff with them every day?
Yeah, I mean, me, him, and his coach are, the coach, the player, and if they're good enough, you know, someone like what I do is with them, and that's the team.
Yeah, because they have the resources to afford it.
And we're with each other, you know, day in, day out, you know, early in the morning till, you know, late at night.
Are you overseeing what they're eating and what they're...
I mean, so this will come down to player to player. So John is... You know, more or less what I did with him is I just communicated and give him information. Let him, he's an adult, make his own decisions, right?
I can't
force people to do it. Some people might like that, and that's fine. An athlete that wants that, okay.
Right.
You got to know who you're working with and dealing with, right? I probably didn't work with him for 10 years because I was jamming information down his throat and saying, hey, do it this way. You know, it's more kind of understanding how to get along, you know, and also, you know, keep increasing, you know,
who brings your value. You in, the coach? Who hires you guys?
The player.
The player.
The player hires his team.
Right.
So, and how do they know about you? Like, how do they know about you and your team?
Yeah, I just, like I said, my brother is the one who got me into the niche. And that's how
my other brother got into it.
It's a small community, and that tennis community is very close-knit. Like, a lot of people know everybody around the world.
Did you work with any female players?
I worked on a little bit, but not. I was exclusively with this player whole time. Yeah,
right. So
James Blake?
No, Rory worked with James
Blake. I see. Rory did your brother.
So were your accommodations and travel on par with your principal, or were you, like, when he flew first class, did you fly coach?
No, I flew as however I could, but I, you know, look, like, we accrue a lot of miles flying, so I was able to upgrade and utilize some of the status perks and stuff like that. So it was very nice, and John is a very gracious person, so he definitely, you know, upgraded me a lot of different times and stuff. So it was
the hotel, were you staying at the same hotel?
The hotels are always very nice.
Yes.
Accommodations are great, and especially, like, for me, I mean, I'm doing work with him because it's on call. You know, anytime he makes more sense for me to be close to him. Like, I'm kind of in his back pocket the whole time.
I had one exposure to that. I had family passes, player passes, for Roland Garros when Pete Sampras was playing.
Oh, nice.
And somebody couldn't go and asked me, and I was going to – anyway, it was in Paris. You get picked up at the hotel by a limo. The area behind, you know, where all of the family's sitting and where all of the guests are sitting, you go back inside the tent behind there. It's like being at it's really nice.
You mean you're not waiting in line for a hot dog?
It's like
I can see why
flying you in a private jet and then going commercial. It's like, oh, man.
And I can see why you have to be careful, you know, with diet and stuff, because every day, you know, you could gorge yourself on anything.
And I think that's what makes a pro athlete in tennis is the discipline.
Right.
I mean, to be disciplined, I mean, that is one big word and I think Tyson has a great little, like, slogan speech, you know, a little, like, minute kind of blurb on it. Like,
yeah.
I think to really achieve and be one of those top guys, like, you have to have discipline.
So you're a Missoula kid. You went to Sentinel. You're here. How'd you get? I know you went to you did your undergraduate work at the University of Hawaii Hilo.
I jumped around a bit. I love baseball,
right?
And so I
and what position you
played? I was kind of a mutt. I played everything, you know, put me on the field. But I played second and third a lot, you know, here for the Mavs and stuff. And then in college, the same. I could hit pretty good, and so I started out kind of the JUCO route, and so I went to North Idaho in Coeur d'Alene for a year, and then there was a Title IX thing, so they cut the team, got rid of the team, and so I went and found another JUCO in Trinidad, Colorado. This is a pretty funny story. This is crazy.
Never heard of Trinidad.
Probably shouldn't, but I don't know. I mean, this is whatever the story leads, but so I got down there, and I didn't much like it. You know, I was kind of homesick a little bit, and I got sick. Like, I showed up a week before school started and was training with the team. And I got sick, and I kind of had, like, sore throat and couldn't swallow and stuff. And I was like, oh, man. And I was, you know, homesick. So I went to the hospital and stuff, and they did some stuff and sent me back. And same, you know, I took some medicine. It was all right, and then got back in, the next day, like, my symptoms were back and worse, and I, like, literally could not breathe. And I was like, what the hell is this? So went back to the hospital. I'm in there, and, like, they do, like, tests, and they're like, hey, you got mono, you got to stay the night. And I was like,
mono?
Mono, yeah. I was like, well, what is this? Like, and I'm like, okay, I do not want to be here. Like, call my dad's like, dude, I'm done. Like, I can't, I'm not going to play. All I heard about was mono is like, you just can't move, right?
Right,
like, you
right,
can't,
right.
Can't play. And so I was like, I'm not going to do school here just to, you know, not play baseball.
Right. Right.
So I was like, come get me. So he does. And like, as I'm in this bed, this hospital, so this is where the story is. Okay. So I didn't know this at the time. And then like some of my buddies came and visited me and stuff. And like, well, at the time when I was going to school there, this was the hospital known for the sex change capital of the world. So when they had that going on,
they didn't confuse you with that's another patient.
So for me, I was like, and I just did like a report on medical mistakes or something. And so I was like, oh my gosh, if they checked my chart wrong, I did not sleep a wink that night at all.
What
like
year
I
was this? Like,
I don't want to wake up and not, you know, be
a
me.
Reassignment. Right.
Yeah. Gender reassignment.
It's just like,
I said, okay, finally, I have good news and bad news for you.
It was a short stint, but it was kind of funny. And it was, I was just like, oh gosh. So it's a beautiful place though.
Yeah, right.
In the middle of the night.
And then how'd you get the helo?
So that year I took off. I went to a JUCO in Scottsdale, played there.
Junior college for those.
And then went up to University of Hawaii, Hilo.
And that was pretty nice.
That was
right?
Fun. Yeah. That was great.
That sounds like a terrible gig.
Yeah. Right. What was your favorite place, by the way, to travel on the tour?
I like Rome.
Rome?
Yes. I like Rome.
Arnie does too.
I'm going to be in Italy next week.
I think the architecture, the energy, and it's just, I don't know.
It's
the
a big, cool city, great. The like, Spanish. It's,
yeah,
apps and,
it's,
you know.
It's so cool.
So, how did you keep out of trouble, right? Because the thing about
you would show me kept out of trouble.
Well, I'm going to open the door for him to say how he didn't. But the tennis tour, for the most part, yes, you guys are working really hard, but, you know, it attracts a higher echelon of celebrities, of benefactors, of business people, of chefs, of everything. So the world is popping when you're on the professional tour.
Yeah, you're around a lot of different individuals from different backgrounds, right? And high level players.
Right.
No, I think I always kept my stuff very, very professional. So I never
your let brother taught you that?
That way. When I was with my brothers, I'd hang out a little bit harder or fun, you know, and kind of let down. You know, I knew we could protect each other or whatever, but we never had issues with
Clint,
that.
Clint, I don't know if you know this. Sorry to interrupt, but one of our past guests on our show, Nick McCarville, he's an announcer.
Okay.
He's from Helena. He's a friend of several of us here, actually.
Right.
Drew downstairs.
And he was announcing at the U.S. Open just recently. And,
yeah, he is on the tour. Right. Do you know him?
And I don't. I think I was asked this before. I think I'm so bad with names, too.
If I've seen him,
I'm sure I have. Yeah.
You're two of like the most famous guys in Montana for tennis.
Yeah. So you're hanging around with, you know,
Eisner,
the best
Eisner,
one of the best U.S. players, mm-hmm. if not the best U.S. player, and you're at these events where all the other celebrities, I mean Serena, I mean they're all there, everybody's there. I saw they just dedicated this major building on the Nike campus to Serena.
Oh, named nice, after good.
Serena. And Serena and John are good friends, and so I know Serena, and
right.
she was good She's friends with Grigor, who my brother worked with, and stuff.
Really,
so, yeah.
So is there anybody that you met during this 10 years that really kind of like your mouth dropped open and you just like couldn't, it was like you got starstruck? Because you're already around a lot of famous, you know, people that are world, you know, world renowned. There are people in the stands that are, you know, the last time, you know, Serena played, it was like a who's who. I mean, you know, from Michelle Obama to, you know, Spike Lee to whoever. Is there anybody?
Yeah, I think well, obviously, I think Serena, she's
right,
awesome.
She's a star.
Her sister, Venus, like,
amazing.
They're awesome. And, you know, to be able to be around them and hang out with them and get to know them a little bit has been incredible. I think anytime you're in the locker room with, like, Roger or Rafa, you know, Novak, I love those guys. I mean, and Roger's, he's there's something unique about him. And, like, there's a few players, you know, like maybe Michael Jordan, Derek Jeter.
They have
Roger,
that, right.
like
some
have
kind
this
of aura
bigger
around
than bigger, right?
Yeah.
And here's one story. Like, so I got to meet Derek Jeter, and like he blew me away because he was in this complex, housing complex where John, you know, lived and trained and stuff, and we were in there going to get lunch and just walking in, and Jeter's sitting there at the table, and John knows him, so he's like, hey, and then introduced me to him.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey,
to
awesome.
The captain.
And I was like, God, this guy's awesome. You know,
right.
Super nice, awesome, chat a little bit and all that. And then, you know, we take off and go. Well, I had to use the restroom or something. So I went back, came out of the restroom, and I was walking by, and I was just like, you know, didn't say anything. And then Jeter goes, "See you later, Clint." And I was just like, what the
hell?
I was like, this guy, like, I forget people's names in 2 seconds. And I was like, this guy, bigger in the world, like, doesn't have to
remember
know
who you are.
Me, you know, this little Peabody. And I was like, wow, that's that thing, right? Like, that's that charismatic recall thing that, like, yeah, you're just, you gravitate towards. Like, I think, yeah, I think Roger has that. I think there Derek has that. I think
a friend
Michael,
of mine was,
you know,
was at an event. And it's within one of these little elevators going down to one of the lower levels. And it's a small elevator. You know, sometimes these properties have only 2 or 3 people could fit in, right?
Small there. Lift.
Small lift. And he turned around. There was one other person in the elevator. And he turns around, and it was Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he didn't know what to say. This is a person that's never at a loss for words. His mouth just, you know.
Agape.
Yeah, agape. I mean,
but let's drill down a little further to, like, the Serenas of the world and the Johns of the world. To be that type of athlete, to be at such a high level, some of it, it's obviously they're physically gifted and you're trying to keep that gift giving. That gift keeps giving. But there's also the mental aspect that, how do you kind of describe that?
I think that's the biggest one. You know, I really do. I think, and what is it? If I knew, I think I'd be paid a lot more.
but now let me translate this to today when you're sitting there and you're working with high school students,
yeah,
and you're trying to impart to them knowledge and information about here's how you eat, here's how you train, but the mental, like, what do you say to them?
Yeah, I think especially in tennis where it's a individual sport, right?
Right,
it's
right,
different
right.
than like a team sport. It's so different. Sure. It's a lot harder to quit on a team than yourself, right? Or did I say that?
No, you're right. It's harder to, other people rely on you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So I think that in tennis is the challenge because there's 2 things. So like one, like I use this kind of analogy, like golf, like I golf. I don't know if you guys golf or tennis in general,
it.
But
we
like
try to golf.
You've hit like a perfect drive or like you've hit a perfect shot maybe with every club. Right. And you expect yourself to hit that perfect shot every time or like when it's
we
like,
never expect
I said,
that.
Well,
my driver,
yeah,
you're
in tennis,
your approach was yeah, right. We play scramble together.
These guys hit those perfect shots
every single time.
And
every time.
They expect themselves to hit that in that moment. And if it doesn't go well, that's one ding right on that conscious level. And
well, it's like a baseball pitcher.
You
play baseball. You expect to throw 98 miles an hour to a spot the size of a silver dollar. When you don't, there's something wrong with you, right?
And you tighten up, and then your confidence goes down, and you don't perform as well.
So what is
the other way?
Repetition?
When you can flip it, no, it's having that confidence. It's that intangible thing that you can't necessarily teach. You can train,
right,
and you can try to train, and some people are better at it than others.
I mean, look at Tiger.
Everybody's different, and I think that was one of the biggest things. Like with John. This guy is an anomaly for the sport. And when he is going, like he played a match against Kei Nishikori. And I think after the match, Kei said, I couldn't do anything.
Right,
I saw,
right.
I've never seen such dominance in the sport of tennis. I mean, he was moving fast, crushing the ball. Like and Kei is faster than crap. Like he'll get to anything and like he's a defensive player. So it's just like, I mean,
that's
to be
dominance.
Able to. That's confidence,
it's determination, it's focus, it's all those
things. How do
you
get there, and how do you stay there? You know, yeah, it's part of that mental bit, right?
Do you think that they see the destination? Do they see the shot already played before they hit it?
I think everybody has a different way of mentally preparing. And right. I would like to think the better and greater ones probably do that. I mean, we hear so much about it in sports science, right?
Right. That's a famous Gretzky quote, right? I skate the way the puck's going to be, not where it is.
Right, right, right.
You know, right. Some of them have that extra sense.
Yeah, and I think you do. I think you have a sense when you're out there.
And
you know,
think in tennis,
you feel where the ball is going to be. You can kind of sense different
things.
More than
any other sport in tennis.
Yeah.
You know, in golf, you go from hole to hole to hole. And if a guy screws up, he screws up. And you don't get to watch it too much. In tennis, you're down a set. You got a little bit of a break. The camera's on the guy or the woman. And there you can see visually, they're trying to refocus, re-energize. You know, they're trying to figure out. They're not thinking about, I got to hit my shot harder. They're just thinking about concentrating and, you know, doing what they do best.
Right, right, right. In the moment.
And it's,
And it's, and tennis is such a great sport because there's so many different matchups, right?
Right.
And so one person might match up totally different than the other person.
Right.
And give them such trouble where, you know, this person's strengths and weaknesses just match up a certain way that, you know, maybe they're not the best player or ranked player, but they just play this other player that's ranked really good hard because of just the matchups.
Well, I think you saw that with the U.S. Open this year.
I think we did, right?
Yeah. So because you're so familiar with the sport of tennis, did you see this kind of changing of the guard happening even before we got to Flushing Meadows where this was
Alcaraz? I mean, you watch him move. This
guy, he's 19 years old. He's unbelievable.
He's really strong, really fast. Yeah. I mean, and mentally he's just a good person, I think. And he's
you can see.
You can see it, you know, and he's got good people around him. Like Juan Carlos, his coach, is incredible. Great person,
you know,
humble, like just good people. You
can
know,
see the
like,
young American
that's like
becoming a more
who? Race. The African American.
Yeah,
Tiafoe.
Yeah, Tiafoe.
See him just raising his game, and you know, in real life, in real time.
And he's such a joyous guy, right?
Right,
and he's so positive, and he's so physically talented, and so he's just getting better and better and better. And once he gets these wins, then it's like that confidence.
The problem
right,
is
there,
he's going to be playing out.
I'm terrible with names, but who was the player that kept on yelling at his sideline, like blaming them for everything?
Oh, I'm not sure. He picks with the crowd, right? Like he did that. I don't know.
You know who I'm talking about? I'm so bad at this. But anyway.
And Murray would do that. I think he's gotten better, but Murray was classic.
Andy. But, you know, I found it – I love watching tennis. I love the individual sports. It is like golf in a lot of ways. You just could so, like – you realize it's just them out on that stage. There's a whole bunch of people supporting them, but at that moment in time, they are executing that shot or that serve.
Well, tennis is different because you're not playing alone. You got somebody hitting the ball back at you.
Oh,
golf,
yeah.
It's just one direction. Right? And you have to play your best game, and you can't worry. You can't stop the other person from doing something.
No.
In tennis – you know, you can move in and dink and dunk. You can try different kinds of things to try to, you know, improve your position relative to who you're playing. And if you're playing somebody who's like Federer, I mean, there's hardly anything you can do in his prime.
I mean,
so are you still? So tell us what's going on right now with you.
You're not doing this anymore.
No, I'm here. I'm here full time.
And why aren't you doing
clinic.
It anymore?
It was time to go. I got a young family, right?
Right.
I mean, we've been together for 10 years and. I think it was a good break for both of us to kind of go, you know, I think when you've had a partnership, especially in tennis, it's kind of unheard of to be together that long, you know, and for me, you know, things with family and kind of doing that. And this is what I've been wanting to do for the past couple of years, you know, so I'm excited. I'm opening up, branding myself, you know, and running out of, you know, the clinic that my dad has. He's given me space. And then hopefully, you know, sometime.
What's the name of the business?
The business is Electric Rehab and Fitness.
And what does the electric stand for?
So, yes. So this is what I'm bringing. So I'm, like you guys have said, I practice a very unique style of, I guess, chiropractic, you could say. I blend a lot of the techniques. So chiropractor by trade, you know, I'm looking at the nervous system. And you know, from that, the nervous system's housed by your vertebra and your skull and these bones that protect, you know, the nerves. And so when you have a kink or anything like that, those nerves don't maybe send the signal right to the muscles or the lymph or the circulatory system or whatever. The nervous system controls everything. So making sure those arthrokinematics are lined up great and perfect, that's my number one. And then from there, I look at, like, the muscles. So it's muscle dysfunction. All right, is this muscle working correctly? You know, how can we figure this out? Muscle test or this kind of device that I'm bringing, a neuroelectrical muscle kind of stimulator, has the ability to do a diagnostic type scan and literally pick up, you know, hey, this muscle is not turning on.
Oh, I see.
And a lot of our injuries are compensation. And it's or we get an injury and we have pain, and the pain is because our muscles aren't working together correctly. You know, it's shut down from either a thought, a trauma, or a toxin. It's kind of the thought, the three T's. So a thought, you know, can create different biochemical responses, depression, you know, sadness and all that. Trauma, you know, it could be microtrauma, just doing stuff, overuse type injuries, or, you know, car wreck, or, you know, anything, you know, concussion type thing. And then thoughts, traumas, and your toxins can be anything, you know, like the drugs or alcohol or different things like that.
Sure.
Can create, you know, wear and tear on your body. So by kind of looking and uncovering all that, you know, I find kind of your dysfunctions, and then from that put together a plan with you, you know, how to, and get you back. You know,
is there a sweet spot age? Is there a particular type, or you like to work with everybody?
Yeah, so I'll work with anybody. And I, you know, I got a couple of young kids. They're 3 and 8 now, and I've been working on them since they're, you know, babies and stuff. So my demographic is really babies to geriatrics. My grandma's 94, and I was using this device on her the other day.
Wow.
There's a really neat setting on it to
make grandma young
drop
again.
You into a parasympathetic state.
Run.
So we're so sympathetic driven, you know, so stressed out. So our nervous system has sympathetic and parasympathetic. Sympathetic is like stress and, you know, that, and our parasympathetic's rest and digest and healing. So we want to get people more in a parasympathetic stress, or sorry, state.
State,
and
right.
So how do we do that, right? There's breath, just breathing, doing different breath work. That's the most natural and free and easy way to do it. Another way is using this device that I incorporate. And there's we hook you up to that and let you kind of just feel a little tingle. And we've done it with heart rate variability checking, and it correlates and shows that drops you into that parasympathetic state so your body can recover.
This is new to Montana, correct?
It's not in Montana.
So you are it.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Dr. Clint Cordial. He is here in Missoula, Montana. Back after this with final words. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Dr. Clint Cordial.
So how do our listeners get a hold of you? If they want to come and consult, you know, have a consultation and figure out what kind of plan you could put together for them, how do they reach out to you?
So we're doing appointment bio, appointment,
that's fine. Appointments. You have to set up an appointment with you.
Yeah.
What number do they call?
We have to call you, Clint.
What number do they call? I'm making it harder.
Exclusive.
The my number is 406-544-6842.
What's your website address?
ElectricRehabAndFitness.com.
ElectricRehabAndFitness.com. And there. This is the only place in Montana, probably the region, that does this, right?
Yeah, no one's doing what I'm doing here in Montana, or really the Northwest, and really kind of what I practice. Not too many people are doing what I do.
Do you bring any Eastern techniques into this?
So
what is that?
Dry needling, I guess I can't say I'm acupuncturist, but I do the dry needling, and I bring a lot of electroacupuncture with it, and a lot of just that philosophy in general.
You're not going to walk on my back, are you?
I do Thai massage.
Uh-oh.
So
do you really?
I do. And my sister in the clinic, she'll do Thai massage as well.
What does your sister do?
She's a massage therapist.
Here in town?
Here in town in the clinic, yeah.
Oh, you're kidding. In your clinic?
In the building. So we're all kind of...
It's like a one-stop shop.
It's a one-stop shop.
You can go in there and get everything taken care of.
So I have to tell you, we both are obviously from back east. When I was living in New York, I had an Eastern doctor who treated me with acupressure, electric pulses, and needling and acupuncture, and then herbs. And I found that to really work. Like, that wasn't just up here. That was working on me. Is that kind of the mindset of like these different modalities can come in and help?
Yeah, I think it can help anybody. I mean, it's I got a toolbox, right? And it's like figuring out which tool works with you,
right.
You know? So that's how I kind of look at
it. I need all the tools in the toolbox. Immediately.
We got to play golf with you, Clint. Where do you play?
I will play anywhere you guys have me.
We'll go do it over at the Ranch Club.
That's awesome. What we
do. Arnie and I go to the Ranch Club. Anyway, you've been a great guest. You've been very entertaining and lots of good information. It's Dr. Clint Cordial. Give us the phone number again.
406-544-6842.
Clint, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate
it. Fun.
It was fun. Arnie, I'll see you next week.
Take care, Scott. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.